Good evening, Source Nation. Welcome to Stay Woke with James Robinson. I'm your host, James, and tonight's subject, we're going to be talking about the Blitz Corporation and all the good work they're doing down here in South Florida. But before I go any further, let me thank our sponsor, the Fisher Projects. Tiffany Fisher, Chief Executive Officer of the Fisher Projects, is changing a lot of things happening in her community. To learn more about this amazing organization, go to www.thefisherprojects.org. Source Nation, as I stated earlier tonight, we'll be discussing the Blitz Corporation with my man, Philip Merrin. How you doing, Philip? How you doing?
Yo, yo, what's going on, Big James? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Yeah, for those of y'all who don't know, I lost a lot of weight in my lifetime. And back in high school, I was doing the same thing. So I've known Philip since I represent that. I'm not as big as I used to be, but I'm still tall, I guess. So let's get straight into the conversation and let's talk about the Blitz Corp and what you're doing down here. I saw some of the events and some of the things you're trying to do. For, I think you said Thanksgiving and was it Christmas or Halloween? What was it? What were you trying to do?
Doing Christmas, and we're gonna do a holiday give back for some health needy families, man. Trying to get a family a computer that's in need, you know, so kids can do some homework. Or even a family that has never celebrated a real Christmas and kind of make that Christmas come true for them. So trying to make sure that, you know, everybody has a chance to feel some type of a happiness this holiday season. Definitely.
That's good. That's great because, I mean, I grew up in the type of household where my dad would collect money from the local businesses and do some of the same work you're doing now. So I actually already know how that looks. I mean, it's got as good and as bad because imagine coming home as a kid, you got a house full of toys, you think you might have the best Christmas ever. Come to find out, your dad may give all these toys to the city of Opa-locka, my little local city. I just ruined Christmas for me ever since I was maybe 12. So, I mean, not really. That wasn't a real Christmas. I'm just playing, but you know what I'm saying.
Definitely.
But no, seriously, though, I learned, like, the value of giving and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I just definitely want to – so you say you're giving away the computers to family that need. When and where are you going to be doing this type of stuff? I think that's important. You know?
So it's going to be – you know, I'm going to reach out to some of the local nonprofits, especially with families with foster care kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to target a family that they know that's in need from the caseworkers, you know, because caseworkers – they're overworked, man, and they're severely underpaid, and they do a lot of good work to help, you know, identify families that they've been dealing with where the kids are trying their best, but they just don't have the resources like everyone else, and the funding, you know, the family doesn't have the funding to kind of make some of those things happen for them. And I just want every kid to feel like they can have that same special attention or have the same level playing field, if that makes any sense, as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And you know, and because of a lot of great referrals, we have a lot of great kids, and we just have to decide, you know, with more funding, we'll probably be able to get more computers. I'm trying to work with a partnership with Best Buy to try to see what we can do there. But trying to make sure that they can have the same resources to further their education, because they're trying, they're busting their butt to get themselves out of the situations that they found themselves in so that they can be successful. And I just want to help them mm-hmm. along the way.
Yeah, I mean, even when I was growing up, I mean, just because, you know, dad gave away toys and all that sometimes don't mean that we were always at it nice. So there have been times where I didn't have access to a computer. We talk way back when we were in middle school and high school. So, you know, that was a long time ago. And you know, technology has changed so much. So it's more a necessity than it was then. I haven't worked in education at every level except for high school, you know, since I was in college too, but since I graduated college. It's just been, I understand the importance of technology, everything going digital nowadays. Even in high school, they're doing a lot of digital content for kids at home so they can try to, you know, continue doing what I think we're on Common Core now.
Yeah.
That's what the state of Florida is on. So in case y'all didn't know, hold on, let me backtrack it and try to give a little context to this for everybody who will be listening to this later. We live in Miami, Florida. You live in North Miami or NMB?
Well, you know, I grew up in North Miami.
Right.
Definitely. And, you know, now, you know, life has taken me in a different spot now. I'm in Sunrise now. But, you know, I always make sure to take a trip back.
That's the hood right next to Sunrise where my mama lived at. But she was living her best life. So, you know, now that was a wild time. So you living in Sunrise, that's good. I'm just saying, that's a good thing. That's good. But go ahead, back to you saying, back to what you said.
Yeah, man. But I've only been up here for about 6 years, but the rest of it I spent down there in Miami, man. We grew up in neighborhoods that just, you know, we looking at it now, I don't even know how we remember how we got to where we at. Like, we grew up in the middle of some of the craziest situations and the craziest things that happened, and we made no excuses, and that's why I always keep a close relationship with all of you guys, because we never made an excuse for our situation that was going to stop us from being able to give back and do what we're doing now, so...
I think, you know, I mean, even as a fellow black man, I like to go ahead. As a matter of fact, I had to thank you because I saw you giving one of my classmates, Kenny, an award for something. And so, first off, let's talk about the award show that y'all put on. It was a Blitz. Blitz, man, go ahead and talk about that a little bit. And also, I just wanted to thank you for going ahead and for saying what you just said, because it's important in this space where, you know, where we don't know where tomorrow's promise even. Because I still live in the hood. So, I mean, I never left, but I'm a property owner now, so it's a little different. But like I said, I never left the hood. I'm still an open walker, and you know, I still see the craziness. And to me, you know, I'm going to let you finish with, you know, about the wars and all that. But to me, having gone out of country and been in different roles that I've never really been in, had I stayed in Florida, I just value the opportunity to get out. You know, just to get up out the hood and see something different. And, you know, most people don't leave the hood. It's crazy because most people who were in high school they never really left Miami or South Florida. And that's just interesting to see them develop as opposed to mine, I guess. So, but go ahead and tell you about, I guess, hours. You know, I'm just doing that. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know where you've been at. But, you know.
First, you know, the Blitz is called the Building of Leaders and Innovators in a Training Zone, right? So the Blitz Corporation is about building young leaders and you know, stretching their minds, exposing them, and educating them to become innovators in our community and to kind of change the game. So I have a saying, you know, break the cycle, change the game, right? So we have to break that generational curse, and the only way we can do that is by educating these younger guys. So my whole purpose has always been to uplift everyone in your life. Like wherever opportunity you get to do that, that's, you know, you have to maximize on it. So, you know, the Men of Honor is an event that I've been thinking about for a while.
Yeah, my bad. I had to go ahead and do that setting again. So I had to make sure it's always be on. But go ahead. You were saying Men of Honor. My bad. I know.
Nah, you good, brother. You good. Yeah. The Men of Honor. So we wanted to, you know, we wanted to honor fathers, man, and we wanted to have a night where fatherhood was on the front stage, you know what I'm saying? And I believe that, you know, all I see is negativity all the time, and I believe that spreading a positive image is how you – these younger kids don't know what happened before. Like, they don't understand – the negative things that we had to go through growing up, you know, without a father or a father who was there and was even worse than not being there. You know, like everybody came from extreme circumstances and had their own, you know, testimony when it comes to fatherhood and what it's meant to them. But I just wanted to shed a positive light where a night where men can come together and feel appreciated, and not only feel appreciated, but be honored by other men and fathers who are, you know, striving for the same goal, that, you know, to do the best that you can for your family, to provide in the role that you have with your family, because not everybody has the role of a provider. Some men are there for the role of supporters. They've taken a back seat so that their wives can elevate themselves and do great things, and it takes a strong man to take that step back, but where does the appreciation come for that? You know, that it's so many battles with gender roles that people say, well, this isn't the role you should have. However, that's what works for their family. So you appreciate that person has assumed a role that it's uncomfortable for them, but they've mastered it and they've done it with excellence, and they don't cry about it. They are doing what they can to be excellent.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's important to have those type of events. I think, you know, that's a whole niche, a whole market that I don't see that's it's really exploited or explored rather down here. I say exploited because we do live in a capitalist society.
Right.
And eventually what you're going to see is, I mean, you see a little bit of them popping up of black men, but not specifically on black fatherhood. So I think that's important. I think it's important that I'll go ahead and make a splash in that way. So I appreciate y'all doing some good work. So let's talk about what else I seen on the website. Oh, yeah, y'all working with Kenny Stills and the Dolphins a little bit. Go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, so Kenny is an amazing, amazing person. You know, I gotten the chance to know him for like the past 3 years. And, you know, I went and talked to him about my nonprofit and what I was trying to do. And you know, I sat in front of his living room and he was like, this is something that our community needs. And he was like, I want to help you every step of the way. And we already know the role that he took, you know, with following Colin Kaepernick and trying to fight for social injustice and trying to, you know, take the right steps. Trying to take the right steps towards a positive message, meeting with the sheriff, going into the community, giving back to the kids from a community he's not even from. You know, he's going to N&B and he's giving these kids upgraded parks and doing all these things, you know, bringing awareness to a community that he has no interest in, right? He has no vested interest in us down here. He only plays for the team, but he's from California. However, he's treating Florida as if he grew up here his entire life. And some people who've been there our entire lives, bro, don't give back as much as he has in a community that's not even his, you know? So being able to have that person as an advocate and an asset in my corner, you know, has been amazing because he's always going to be a resource to help out the kids and he's always going to be a voice for them. And he also is doing great things with, he's trying to create, you know, a process and a gateway for young African-American kids or kids of color and minorities to have an open source access to mental health resources. And it's not too much that I can talk on now, but I know that, you know, just follow his page. It's a Still Growing Foundation on Instagram, and you're going to see what he's trying to do. And when this launches, it's going to be something that's so amazing.
What was that? The Still what?
Still Growing Foundation.
Okay. S-T-I-L-L. Growing Foundation?
Yep. It's on Instagram. Definitely.
Okay. Like regular Still. I remember he spelled his name kind of, well, he spelled Stills. Okay.
Yeah, Stills, yeah.
Okay, well, that's part of the disconnect I was having. So, first off, anything further you wanted to talk on that? Because I actually wanted to ask you about how do you. Well, first off, do you still have a day job? Is it what you do full time? And if you do still have a day job, how do you find navigating, you know, the spaces as a nonprofit and what you're doing in the community?
So, as of 2 weeks ago, I no longer have a full time job. I knew that going into this, man, I was going to have to make sacrifices. And, you know, I was with Comcast for 6 years, six wonderful years. And, you know, they allowed me to grow, you know, as a father. I became a father with them. I became a husband. I owned a home. You know, I was able to start and fund my nonprofit because it's 100% funded by me. I have no grants or anything. So I've been using the money that I made from there to start this process. But it comes a time when, you know, you have to do what's right and you have to start, you know, following your heart and doing what you're supposed to do for your community. And man, I had to do it, you know, and it was a tough decision, but it had to be done. And I'm not looking back, you know, whatever the journey has for me moving forward, man, I'm appreciating it and I'm walking through it with open arms, but I know I did everything right financially to put myself in a situation to take some time, be with my family. And figure out how I can impact this community full time.
Okay. Well, so you talked about working with nonprofits earlier. Do you know of our classmate? I mean, I didn't know when we was in high school, so I mean, she's a little bit older than us. But you know Valencia Gunder?
No, that name doesn't ring a bell.
She go by V. That's her name. She probably one of the biggest advocates that you need to. I need to connect y'all.
Definitely. I'm all about relationships, man. I'm about connecting with everybody, man. We just need to come together. We need to find, you know, a restaurant or something where we can all link up. And I think that we need to start having more conversations.
We got black on everything. As a matter of fact, V's one of the people that, I mean, low key, she knows, she don't, she got a lot of mentors and things like that. Okay. Hope somebody asked me for podcast. That's I'll have to get back in a minute. but no, So V's one of the people that she does a lot of good work in the community. She's been feeding homeless people probably six years in downtown Miami every third or second Sunday or whatever. I don't know her schedule. She goes out there, she gets some haircuts, clothes, food. It's a whole, like, she takes over a whole, basically a block where everybody knows when she's coming. And I've done a little work with V in terms of hurricane, getting some hurricane supplies in the Opa-locka area. So, but no, she does a lot of, as a matter of fact, she's one of the people that they really champion the restorative rights for felons in Florida.
Yes.
And women, female prisoners access to mandatory access to sanitary napkins, tampons, things like that. She's been going really hard on. She's actually one of the people that actually really went to the state legislator and really was pushing it hard. So that's what she does. That's a lot of work, and so I definitely got to connect y'all. I mean, she's on Facebook too, so I'll probably just
tag her. Yep, just tag me on her post, and we gonna become instant friends. It's all about relationship building, because you never know who can get you to that open door. To start having conversations, because I feel like the day that life skills was removed from the school curriculum is the day that some of the kids have just been failing, you know, at life, not just in education, at life. Yeah, man. So,
I don't know what you mean, but I know what you mean, though. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know what you mean. We didn't live through that. I guess you can see a difference. I mean, having to work in education, kids don't write cursive. They don't really learn how to the phonetics and phenols and all these other different things. The way reading is broken down, it doesn't fit the learning style of black and brown kids anywhere. And that can be said anywhere. And I was a math tutor at the college. I stepped away from that in February. I couldn't do it anymore. Only because what I was saying is it wasn't futile. There is a meaning in helping somebody climb that ladder, but what I realize is that even if you climb the ladder and you call yourself quote unquote successful, the best you can hope to do is hope to work for somebody else.
Right.
So I'd be a hypocrite if I just sit here and work for somebody else, and I still work for other people now, but it's a little bit more of a direct, conversation where I'm more flexible in my schedule and things like that. But more importantly, I get to work for myself. I get to sit there and invest. And I could have done that in Miami-Dade, and I was working at the college at Miami-Dade. And I could have did that doing that. You know, going back to the connection speech, did you know Munch in high school?
Yeah, I knew Munch. Yeah, me and Munch are cool, man. I follow everything he's doing, man. And he has his...
real tight. Him and V are real tight.
Okay. Yeah, he has his podcast, and I definitely listen to his podcast.
I'm sorry to cuss. I'm sorry cussing, y'all. Go ahead. Yeah.
He has his podcast, and I know he do big things, man. And I follow him, and I know that, you know, he's given everything, every ounce of his body to his neighborhood. And I always tell him that I'm appreciative of the work that he does, that I'm hoping to get to that level that he's at, because he's been doing it consistently. And I know it's a struggle. I'm watching him with the struggles and the opportunities that he's seeing in the community of getting that help. And I'm trying to get to a point where we can put our minds together so I can get those same, like, a resource to help him to move the narrative along. So that's why I'm working tirelessly. That's why I took this step to try to get to that point, because we have to start helping these people that's given their life back to the neighborhood to find peace instead of just liking posts on Facebook and stuff, you know. So trying to take it to the next level.
Right. Yeah. I probably don't support much enough, but I need to go out there and see him. Cause he does. There's a business on 7th Avenue, 441, and like 54th Street, 55th technically, right there by the Burger King. It's called the Black House, the Roots Collective Black House.
Yes.
And over there, yeah. So I was going to Peace in the Hood for a while, but I only really stopped going because I gotta get my car tag straight. I expired tag, so. And then it's my dad's name, it's all the other cats. I don't want to keep dealing with all that. But I really bang with Much and V and what they've been doing. I didn't even know them in high school. I didn't know them at all.
Right.
I didn't know them in high school, but, you know, just navigating these spaces, doing some of the things that I'm doing, I guess being an advocate. Eventually, we just, ran into each other in the real world. So, so let's talk about the mental health piece and how it affects people who are advocates, because even myself and V and Munch, you and anybody else who's doing this work, Cab or Nip or Nipsey Hussle, I talked about that months ago, but that was a conversation between you and I. But and before he was, killed and all that, what does mental health look like on the ground level in terms of advocacy? How does it affect your personal life with your family, and what's the ultimate fulfillment that you get out of doing the work?
Oh man, so the mental health piece is probably the most crucial piece of it all, man. I feel like you have to almost black out, if that makes any sense. Like, it's so much noise. It's so much negativity. It's so much you're wasting your time. It's so much you can't do this. It's so much, oh, you're just doing this for fame or notoriety. And I'm like, hey, this is a nonprofit. Like, I'm not making any money. There's no money invested in this. And I realize it's a willing ignorance, because if people understood what nonprofit meant and what people are trying to do out there, like what Munch and them are trying to do is basically educate you that, hey, instead of you selling that house for $300,000, keep it, because it could be worth $900,000, and you can build up your...
That's exactly how I got the door, Munch. That's not how I got the door. That's not how... Go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
Because, you know, he's on live, and he's telling people, he's like, don't let these people buy your houses. They're trying to take our neighborhoods. He's screaming it.
That's how it works.
Right.
Nickels on the dollar, and you turn around to 5-10 years later, that dollar's fully realized, and all the neighborhood has been displaced.
Correct. And the affordable housing is gone, and all these things are happening, and you know, all the promises that you've listened to these politicians when they say, hey, listen, go out and vote. Don't trust these people. This is what they're trying to do to you. They make you out to feel like the crazy person. They make you feel like something's wrong. And where we're sacrificing our time with our families, you know, we could be, you know, spending that time with our kids and families and loved ones in our house and just blocking out the noise. But no, we're in the field. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to save these kids. Even the kids that don't want to be saved, I'm fighting to help them realize that without this help, nobody out there is going to help you. They think that there's this perfect world, and now everybody knows everything, and you can't teach anybody anything, and we're just trying to tell you, hey, listen, here's a better path, here's a better way. And when they don't listen, you have to bring those frustrations home. You don't want to. You could take it out on your loved ones. You could in personal and you know, professional relationships. It's so much. And then the question is, when you're trying to help all these people, who's helping you?
Right.
Right? And that's where the mental health factor comes in, because you're investing and pouring in all these people, and you're trying to give back, and all they're doing is taking from you. All they do is want from you. But who's investing in you? Are you giving yourself that same self-love that you want everybody else to aspire to have? Are you giving yourself that same knowledge that you're trying to pour into everyone else? And sometimes you have to take a step back, and Munch said it. You have to go to therapy. You have to talk to someone. Man, I did therapy for the first time, and it opened my eyes. It changed my world. All the anger that I felt was gone, and I started to realize, hey, attack the negativity and that urge of depression with positivity. I started bowling more. I picked up golfing. Things that I would never normally do, I started to fall in love with these things because it allowed me to remove that negative space that I was in most of the time. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm waking up smiling now, man. You know what I'm saying? And I can hear 15 no's. It don't matter to me anymore. Before, when I heard a no, I would be sitting in the house just playing video games, just spaced out like, man, I'm wasting my time. I don't know what I'm doing this for. And then it started to hit me like, man, just love life. Appreciate it. Because it only takes one kid to be like, Philip, man, listen, what you're doing is changing these kids' lives. And it reversed all that negativity. And I heard it today, to be honest with you. I heard it today. And they're like, Philip, you're changing these kids' lives. Please do not stop what you're doing, because they want you here. They need you here to continue to do what you're doing. And that's the end game. That's what we're doing it for. You know what I'm saying? So I wish everybody was assigned a therapist, and the therapists were assigned therapists, because it makes it so much easier.
Everybody else needs. I mean, that's just what it is. That's just how it becomes. If therapists need a therapist, and they therapists need that, not a vicious cycle, but it becomes repetitive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
Nothing bad. Yeah,
maybe. when you get to pour into somebody and you get to kind of have that conversation, you feel like, all right, you're answering the questions yourself. Obviously, it's their game. I understood the game. They're like, all right, so what do you think you should do in this situation? And you start having some logic to some of the thoughts that you're having, because sometimes our thoughts can come out raw. Like, you'd be like, you know what? I want to start a college. And, like, James, what do you mean you're trying to start a college? And everybody's like, they're attacking you on, you're trying to start a college. What are you trying to start a college for? What are you going to do? But then when you get a chance to sit back and talk to somebody who has rationale and they're actually listening to you actively instead of trying to, you know, just talk at you, they're listening to you. And you're like, no, I want to start – James wants to start a college to help, you know, young African-Americans understand the history of us as brown people, of where we come from. And it's an African studies course that takes them to the next level. And it could be a course that's implemented across all colleges. You get that with a therapist, but you don't get that talking to your everyday friends.
No. But see, here's the thing. Here's what I learned. And then, I don't know, I mean, we've known each other for a long time. Even as a kid, here's what I felt when we were children. And then we were kids, we were like, by the time I met you, I was like 15, 16 years old. So, yeah. Kids, relative term. But yeah, we were kids still. Here's what I learned since then. When I was younger, I had a sneaky suspicion that adults were not smart. Everybody in the world who was a teacher not a teacher per se, but an adult. You know what I'm saying? Like, the world didn't run on efficiency. It didn't work on great mental health. It didn't work on none of these different things that we need to talk about. We didn't learn about taxes, life skills weren't a part of our curriculum, we didn't learn about vocational skills and nothing like that. Which is, by the time I met you, actually I wanted to drop out of school, but I wanted to go to college early. That was the plan, and my dad made me stay in school. So I'm glad that happened, so we was able to meet each other and all that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I still got a valid point when I was a kid. Because I realized from then, the educational system was a joke. And that's why I had to ultimately step away from it, because, you know, you could say promoted to math advisor, to an advisor for the department. But first off, I wasn't getting the more extra pay, so that's not a promotion. And two, it's put me in a different vantage point where I could see exactly what I had already known from jump. And it was the more administrative side when people are failing classes and all these different things, and then trying to take the right teacher, and then them always blaming their inadequacy. And that's why I learned this. People don't go hard. And one thing that I did, I made sure back when I was a tutor, that you're going to learn. And you're going to learn how to do successful things. You're going to learn the rough love, tough love route, because that's what you need. I mean, for me at least, because I'm not going to give you nothing else. So, you know, it sounded... I'm rough and I'm tired. Not rough and tough. It sounded more like a dude from Opa-locka who got a college degree from the hood. I'm from the hood. Who got a college degree. So it came with that. I mean, I know what I know. And we're in the middle of the hood anyway. So that's what I gave people. And it was working. I had I would see it actually be transformational in the space. So that's why they tried to give me another opportunity. But then when I saw the people failing, and I saw this one instance where one of the professors or teachers or TAs, whatever you want to say it, was charging the student $20 an hour for tutoring, and she wasn't putting the work in it. I guess they would just talk about life or bull BS, whatever the case may be. Or maybe they did talk about math, but she wasn't understanding, whatever the case may be. And I tell you right now, It was on her. But still, the fact that she's his student, actual student, in his class, can't be charging him $20 an hour. And he's a good man, too. And I understand why he's good. And first off, he ain't get paid that much, so that's not I'm going to leave that at what it is. And I don't want to speak too much on it. But it was a whole bunch of little different instances where I noticed everybody's not in all the way. And I think you kind of touched on it earlier, how to pour back into those who need that, who always pour in front of themselves.
Right.
So I think that's important, that you can't let your cup go empty, because when you look back at it, you have nobody else to blame but yourself.
Right.
And that's a tough time to swallow. Yeah. That's one of those things that I learned since I was a kid. Even when I thought adults were dumb, it wasn't that everybody was dumb. It's just that I had different skills, a different level of analysis or critiques or whatever the case may be, where I understood the world in a very, very, very unique, I guess, sort of way. And I would share that with the students and make sure, you know, there's one thing, you know, to tell you can tell somebody, oh, you can make it and you can do this and that. And third is one and another thing, and go back into the community, working you there or whatever way you're working, and be that example that people need to see on a daily basis. Especially, I mean, I understand you're Haitian, but as African American, you don't see that. You don't see that at all. And everybody that you see that went to college, education, whatever, he always come back and try to either they try to play the political game. And I'm not for it. I just can't do it. I grew up in my house. It's just, I can't do it. Sorry. So where are you specifically working? As you say, you're working with kids. What cities? What part of town are you working in? So we can put more spotlight on that.
So right now I am in Miami-Dade and Broward, but mainly in Broward right now. Miami-Dade, I'm working with, you know, partnership with a lot of the schools out there and talking to a lot of the athletes, you know. But in Broward right now, I'm really in the foster care world, helping out a lot of the kids that don't have anybody at home right now. You know, I have a organization that's called Handy Inc. And they deal with, kids who are foster kids or disadvantaged kids or at-risk kids. They bring them in to a safe space and they teach and they educate and they allow me to come in and teach them life skills. And it's been, you know, life-changing, you know, to meet some of these kids. And I've been doing it for 2 years now. This is year two. And the kids from year one still come around and say, hey, Mr. Blitz, we love what you do. When are you coming back? They want me there more than just the summertime. I've been doing their two summer camps now, but they want me there even longer. So I'm working on that right now. But I'm also trying to build a partnership with a lot of the schools down in Miami-Dade County to pour back into where we came from. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to get back into Central and be able to talk to some of these kids and be able to help out my alma mater, you know, like to go back and give them something that we didn't have when we were there to help these kids elevate faster than we did growing up. I want them to avoid the mistakes. So my goal is to set up camp in Miami-Dade. But for right now, Broward is the city that gave me my opportunity with open arms, and I'm maximizing that right now.
Hey, and I'm not mad at you at all. As a matter of fact, I know a teacher who works here. He's a math teacher. Cause like I said, I was working in the math department at the college. He's a tutor. He was also working as a tutor part-time at the college. He's a math teacher at Central. And his name is Lawrence. And he said he went to school with it. But I'll tell you again, I guess I didn't know about you. So I'm like, Lawrence, you went to Central? I didn't know you at all. Like, what the hell is going on? So, right. You know, I guess, you know me, I guess. I mean, that also fits my profile. Like, I mean, I'm loud. So everybody can hear me. But I love to be seen. It's not my favorite thing. I love to be heard, more so I like to be seen. So,
he's doing
exactly that right now. He's working at Central as a math teacher. I'm pretty sure I don't know if he's going back next year. That might be something that he may be trying to get off. I'm pretty sure this is his dream job. He loves working with the kids. So let me go ahead and I don't know. So Lawrence and V are the two people in my head right now that I try to see if I can connect you with. While I got you on here, I know this is outside of the Blitz Court. Tell me how you feel about the state of the national politics. What's going on in this country with the pedophiles and the sex trafficking and all these other different things we got going on from the White House? How do you feel about all that's going on right now? And how does that affect nonprofits in Florida? Go ahead and bring it back home.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right. So, state of the politics. I always tell everybody that, you know, 45 is what I call him. He's been openly able to, you know, disassociate himself, which everybody has the right to not agree with everything that happens in the world or not be open to people's viewpoints or choices that they make. And I can understand that. I everybody has a different viewpoint. I can respect that, but I also respect everyone's choice as a human being. You have a choice to do what you want. And, you know, that's the basis of this country, that you land on the freedom, not on the freedom of believing what I want you to believe, but in the freedom of believing and you can do what you want. He has been able to isolate and disassociate himself from everyone other than people who look like him. And he's been able to do that successfully with the backing of America. And I just think that, you know, in comparison, everybody just wants to compare him against Obama and say, well, here's what Obama didn't do or what he wasn't doing for the community. See, what you're doing is exactly what he wants you to do. You want to focus on the comparison between him and Obama, but what you're missing is he's doing absolutely nothing for you.
Mm-hmm.
All he's doing is talking about how great America is and how free we are, but what has he actually done for our community? What is he doing for the black community? What is he doing for education? He's putting a lot of unqualified people to run housing. He's putting unqualified people to run our educational system, and everybody's just turning a shot eye to it.
Putting pedophiles in charge of human trafficking. I'm just throwing that
right.
That's right. I'm just saying, hey, that might be unfair to Acosta, but it is what it is.
first of all, honestly, James, I believe that Law and Order SVU uncovered what is already happening in this country, and it just goes, it's looked past because it doesn't affect anyone in their personal homes. But all these foster kids and all these kids who don't have homes are all in this, I believe, $1 trillion business of sex trafficking or human trafficking that's happening all across this nation. And it's funny how nobody pays attention to it until, hey, my little niece went to school and all of a sudden she's not here. Everybody help look for her. You'll never find her. The case disappears. The Facebook posts disappear after a couple of days. And next thing you know, that's just another lost child. But she's not lost.
There's no uproar. There's none of that.
Right. There's no beating down of the door like, hey, we need to figure out who's kidnapping these kids. And that's because all these guys have their hands in a $1 trillion pot. They're all making money from the fact that this is to satisfy and gratify all of the big money guys who want to be able to go in and pay $40 to have sex with the girl of his dream. You know, it's instant gratification. That's the world we live in now. That's why there's all these sex clubs. That's why there's all these underground things, because there's a reason for that. In order for that market to continue, you need to keep replenishing the product. And all they're doing is replenishing the product, but there's not one person who's going to go against that giant because everybody's afraid of the giant. But if we exposed it, then we could save our communities, because all we're going to keep doing is losing these little girls, using these little boys, and everybody's just gonna be like, okay, well, it's the tea of the, like, it's always the flavor of the month. And then once the flavor of the month disappears, it disappears for good. Look at Nipsey. How many people are still going out there talking about, hey, we need to figure out how we can get more streets in Crenshaw that's black-owned and do all this? It just died out. Everybody just says the marathon continues. Where is it continuing to? With a Facebook post? Like, what are we doing to continue the narrative? And I think that's what we get lost in. We get lost now into this social media world where we're just lost into posting. We're lost into reposting and tagging these people. And we need to fight for our community. We're just falling in love with the words. I'm not trying to fall in love with words. I'm trying to fall in love with action. Like, I just want to be out in the streets and just doing the work. Because if not, then we're going to keep putting people in office who are giving us words. And we're like, well, they made me feel good. And it's because she's black, or it's because he's black, or it's because they're a woman. We need to vote for this person. No. What are your actions? Don't wait to become the president to tell me you're going to change something. Change it now. Change it in your state. Change it in your city. I need to see you making this change now as you're a commissioner, a board member. Laws are you passing? Don't tell me you tried to fight for this law. Come out on CNN and say, I'm fighting for this law. Right in the middle of the Senate floor, we need this to be done. Once I start hearing those things, I believe in that person. But we keep just falling in love with words, and they're showing no action. So when they get in office, they just disappear. They've taken our whole community and ran with it, and they leave us with nothing but another 4 years to wait to try to do the same thing again. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Hold on. So what we're talking about, very... very ancient things that go back to the root of politics. Politics is all about two things: political theater and emotion. If you can get in that theater and capture the zeitgeist, the emotion of everybody in that at that moment, and that's what we fail to realize. And it's not just black people. That's Americans writ large. Study right. History. And so, obviously, we allow ourselves to be prisoners of these moments. First off, I'm on all the social media outlets mostly, and I'm always on social media, but also puts a message, you know, with it. So, but at the same time, I get caught up in this emotion. I was in D.C. at Howard University when we elected Barack Obama the first time. So you already know it was a whole wave of emotion. And I'll even talk about the changes that I've seen both in D.C. and in Miami. They're running the same game.
Right.
It gets me frustrated. That's what makes me want to, you know. That's actually why I stay home a lot, because I see them running the same game. Right. It's not depressing. It just makes me angry. But at the same time, not angry in a bad way. Why? This is me. It fuels a passion of mine. So it's not just anger in and of itself. For me, I've always had to learn how to deal with my anger since the early age. So I had reading and other outlets to help me kind of get out of this moment and recognize moments that have come before. And it informs me. That's why I'm able to make a couple of predictions that everybody's not able to make, because I understand what a moment is. I understand the concept of time. Even going back 6,000 years, so we're going back to ancient Africa, or you're going before Greece, was an idea, before Europe even existed, we had already developed a spiritual system. And I think that's what's lacking when it comes, we talk about mental health. There's a mental health issue, but I think there's a spiritual death that's being played out while we're living. That causes I'd rather get to the root of the issue, right? Which I think it's one thing to sit here and read and gain all this knowledge, and it's another thing to go out there and tell people what's going on but people got to be willing to put that work in. And that's something that I learned myself. You got to be able to sit down with yourself and learn to be still. It's the hardest thing to do, because when you get those no's, you get those yeses, you don't move left or right. You're still. You're right in the middle. I don't know. I'm willing to see a therapist. I'm willing to go see one, but I can't afford it right now. So, as a matter of fact, Marsh got some therapists up in Fort Lauderdale, Black home, right. Very conveniently located. I just need to get my money up, and I go see them later.
But that's the thing, though. You shouldn't have to pay for it. I think that's another thing. Like, that should be something that's access to us as an American. Just like the way Canada healthcare is free, at least make mental health free. Like, if you want to go seek therapy, there's no way you should be paying for that. You should be openly welcomed to go see a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should be something that every American should have the right to have, is the right to therapy. Funded by our government to allow people to be sane, because what happens is, if you have to keep paying, that's what happens when these kids get bullied. They have no one to talk to. The counselors are underpaid. They're overworked in the schools. So you miss this one kid who's been getting bullied. The school system did absolutely nothing because they don't want to suspend the kids. They have to keep a certain number of kids in those schools to keep these bonuses going. So they keep the kids in the schools.
I saw the same game. I'm telling you, I've seen gentrification in the school system. I've seen it in the neighborhoods. I've seen it in the politics. I've seen it in the media, in the TV shows, in the pop culture, in the music. And if you really want to call it what it is, it's slavery by another name. It's neocolonialism. It's colonialism, whatever way you want to call it. They call it gentrification now. That's because we keep thinking in their language. And when we think, and here's where the power of language comes into play. Being a Haitian man, you don't always speak English, right? I'm assuming that you may speak Creole with some Haitian people that you know, da 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 da. Okay, cool. But when you speak it in another language, it informs the way you think. Because there are a lot of words that don't translate, a lot of phrases that can't translate across languages because the syntax is different. The sentence structure, we're not gonna get into a linguistic conversation, but while I'm having studied these glyphs, just the neophyte that I am, the newbie, whatever way you want to say it, I am an amateur, whatever way you want to say it, in that arena, but having studied some of these other languages, you'll realize there's a depersonalization that happens in English that works itself out socially, especially when it comes to the minds and hearts of non-European people. And that's, it works that way in Spanish, it works that way in French. That's the legacy of colonialism that they don't talk about when you steal someone's language, you really inform their, you steal away their ability to think for themselves. You steal away their religion. You steal away their ability to pray in the way they are most accustomed to. And then what happens is you don't really change that. What you happens is it goes underground. So you get all these different religions that become sparks for revolution. Bodoun from Benin that finds itself in Haiti and in Jamaica and Cuba and in all these other different places. And it manifests itself as what the English call maroonage. You just want to get away from the system. You don't want to be a maroon. I mean, the maroons in Jamaica are legendary because they fought back the British, they fought back the Spanish. And Haitians, and we were talking about Haitian glory. We talk about Haitian revolution, but what we don't talk about is Black Americans enough is that effect on why Haiti is still being treated at the bottom of the social economic ladder in the West Hemisphere is because three things: gentrification in terms of gentrifying the other side of the island, in terms of was all that craziness that's happening in the DR right now. We can talk about that if you want to, but we're in the frame of the larger discussion. Two, they were colonized by France. France is the worst colonizer, probably economically, for anybody. Hmm. What they do is they steal all the wealth from your nation and invest it in the French stock market. You're not going to see any profits back. You got to use the French military. If you try to break away from France ideologically, and this, that, and the third, they're going to come and basically destroy your economy. And thirdly, going back to the major point about education, your schools have to be taught in French. Hmm. You can't speak them. You can't teach. I don't know what it's like in Haiti, so don't get me wrong, because Haiti might be a little different. But if you ask me, all Haitian universities are French. They're from French money. And they may have American ties in them where, you know, it's not all French, but whatever the case may be, it's not Haitian.
Yeah, but French is a language that they have to learn, because all my cousins who were there, French is like their primary language and Creole is their second. They can speak French fluently.
In Africa too. You know that, right? So this is the legacy going back. Like, if you go back another 200 years, so we talked about 6,000 years. We talked about all that. I didn't get it too deep into that. But let's talk about 1884 and 1885. What happens is, you got all these European powers. You got Germany, France, England, Brussels, Belgium. Not Brussels. They all meet up in Brussels and in Berlin to divvy up Africa. You get this section, you get this section, and it created all the boundaries and borders in Africa that still exist to this very day. So what happened was the colonizers got amongst themselves and said, because there was... World War One was about to happen on the African continent over African colonies. That's something that we don't talk about. World War One almost happened 40, 50 years before in Africa, with Europeans fighting over African resources.
That's crazy.
So what happens is they get together in Belgium and Berlin, and they draw all these borders in Africa to create all the nations that we got to this day. So what that does is ideologically, you in Ghana, you speak English. You go to Cote d'Ivoire, you speaking French. You go over here, you go to Guinea-Bissau, you speaking Portuguese. You over here now. And it's so confusing what happens is all the educational systems are also in these European languages.
Right.
So they develops. So the other thing that they did was the more powerful the kingdoms were in Africa, the more countries they made out of that particular region and territory. So that's the divide and conquer tactic that they use. Okay, we're going to put the French-speaking Africans against the Portuguese-speaking Africans against the English-speaking Africans, and that's what we have until this very day.
Yes, that's a struggle in our own neighborhoods every day. That's where colorism and all these other things it started with language, you can say. But it started to be more divisive.
I mean, it manifests itself in language, is what I'm saying.
It started there, definitely.
Oh yeah, it started. And see, and another thing about slavery is that we forget, because we don't know, we don't study it enough. Slavery we can't talk about European slavery. We don't talk about the 1,000 years of Arab and Muslim slavery in Africa. Let me tell you why that's important. Because what happens is once the Europeans, once the white folks start getting into slavery, they're doing it to quote-unquote convert the savage Africans into Christians. Because they had already just basically taken over the Arab and Muslim slave routes. So when you're talking about Christianity in this country, a lot of those people that were taken on the boat, about 40% of the Africans taken into this country and in the Caribbean were Muslim.
Correct.
So what that does is that creates, and then it becomes easy to see how Malcolm X will become that next century. Because that had already been sold, those seeds had already been sold generations before when his ancestors had been taken, well, our ancestors had been taken from the continent. And not only that, so now we have, hold on. I'm doing the show, hold up, cuz. But yeah, so not only do we have Arabs and Muslim religion being invested into it in the Arabic language, so then you come to English, they didn't speak English. So now, of course, now we're treated as illiterate, even though those African people might know 5 or 6 different languages.
Right. You don't speak
English. So we're illiterate in English. And there's a lot of people that actually they write about their enslavement in Arabic. And some of those records are preserved. I think Omar bin something. I forget his last name, the last part of his name. But yeah. some of his records have just been preserved. I think it may be in Boston or maybe it's Smithsonian, somewhere like that. So there's his message could be shared for future generations. But yeah, now we kind of talked about a lot of everything. So let me get back to the script. I gotta read the script now. Hold up. So let me go ahead and thank the sponsors. As always, this is Stay Woke with James, and this is my special guest, Philip. So, is there any contact information you want to give out on the podcast? That way they know what's going on and how to contact you. Oh.
Well, they can always follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is The Blitz of SFL. I have a Facebook page. It's The Blix Corporation of South Florida. I have a website. It's theblixcorp.com. Just follow me, man. It's a journey. Everything that happens, I try my best to post it in real time. If not, I'm in the field working. Like, normally you won't see me posting when I'm in the school because I'm working with foster kids and I don't like to put their pictures on the internet. That's for their protection. But definitely, you know, I want to meet with more people. I want to connect with more people. If you have any ideas, definitely reach out. I partner with everybody. If you want to even talk about the process of starting a nonprofit and how to get into it, I'm open to helping and mentoring anybody I can. If you want to mentor me, reach out. And I'm definitely, I'm a sponge. I love to learn. So yeah, you know, anybody who wants to connect, definitely link up and we can definitely do it. Cause I want South Florida to be better for our community. Definitely.
Okay, cool. So I just want to shout out again Source Nation and Kathy D and the Fisher Projects, our sponsors. I want to say that we're going to do this nonprofit. I'm dragging my feet on that. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to be cutting the other half of my grass, but I let it go so high. I'm still tired. I'll just play. But my space schedule is off, so that's the end of it. But I'm going to get this podcast out soon. I'm going to have to do some edits. And not really. I just did those two middle parts where we got disconnected. I had to take that out. Other than that, I mean, I guess I'm going to also shout out myself. Again, this is Stay Woke with James Robinson. We'll come back to y'all next Wednesday from 7 to 8 o'clock. Hopefully we can do a live show next time and we can get everybody who has comments, questions, or concerns answered on air so that way we can if you have any questions, leave them in the comments, please, or any comments for Philip. I'll make sure that he gets them and reads them. He do a lot of good work. Again, I know him since high school, so I know him personally. So I already knew he was a good dude. And matter of fact, he gave me $20 one time, so I want to thank you, Philip, for giving me that $20. Appreciate that.
No doubt, man. Listen, bro, I love what you do. I love what you do, man. I love what you're doing with this, bro. And And you know, I didn't care if you hit me up and said you needed it. I didn't ask what it was for. I don't care what it's for. If you say you need it, you got it from me. If I got it, that's how I always am. You know what I'm saying? Like you could have used that and became a millionaire, and I wouldn't ask you for nothing back. That's just how I am. I'm all about progressing people, man. You're an amazing person, and I can't appreciate you more for the opportunity you've given me for, you know, coming on this platform. And I hope that we can do it live, and I hope that it can grow from here. We can, you know, elevate it and bring more to the content and more conversation to the table. So again, I appreciate you, bro. And I just hope for more continued success with this, bro.
I appreciate it. So let me go ahead and make all these edits and talk to my cousin who's about to be here. So I'm all in the Source Nation. Y'all stay safe and stay woke. Peace out,
right,
y'all.
Man. Have a great one.
Yeah.